ॐ अज्ञानतमिनन्दस्य अर्जुनार्जुनशलाकया चक्षुसुमिलितञ्जेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्थपितं येन भूतले सायं रूपकदमयं ददाति सा पदन्तिकम्। पञ्चकल्पतृभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च पतितनं पावनेभ्यो Vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Brahma had seen something very wonderful. After the demon Agasura was killed, and there are many wonderful things about the killing of Agasura. One of them was that when Krishna performed, when he killed demons prior to this, he did it in such a way that his Nadalila, or him acting as if he's an ordinary young boy, a village boy, Gramyavat, he killed them in such a way that the residents of Vrindavan's relationship with him wouldn't be disturbed. In other words, he didn't use his powers. He didn't expand himself. He didn't use his great shaktis. When he killed Kesi, for example, he inserted his left hand in his mouth and expanded it, and no one could see that. When he killed Shakatasura, he killed Shakatasura in such a graceful way, because the demon was formless but in the shape of the cart, and Krishna was just the smallest, most tenderest of babies, perhaps a month old. And as babies kick their legs when they're on their back, Krishna kicked his leg. Now, how much power does the kicking of a baby's leg have? A baby, Hare Krishna. A baby's legs are so weak that he can't even support his own body. So therefore he crawls. So at this stage, Krishna had just been, was a month old, and he couldn't even crawl. But yet, the movements of his tender legs as he kicked caused this big, heavy cart, which was covered in metal cooking utensils, to immediately split apart, and the utensils fell to the ground, making a loud crashing sound. And everyone immediately ran to see how the child was. And the baby was just fine. Krishna. But Krishna didn't exhibit his powers except in an indirect way. And when Krishna killed Agasura, he was within the mouth of the demon, and therefore no one could see him. So therefore he was allowed to kill him in a creative way, because he had a problem. If he just picked him up and threw him like he threw other demons, what was the problem? What was the problem? The boys were inside his belly, and the boys would have had a very difficult time. And Krishna does not want his devotees to have a difficult time. So he was very creative in how he killed Agasura. He expanded himself until the demon couldn't breathe any longer, and he died. And then something else happened that is even more astounding, is that when Krishna was about to enter the body of Agasura, oh, I don't even want to speak about this now, because I will speak about it at Govanan. So I won't speak about it. Delete that, please. But in any case, Brahma saw that. He saw that the soul of Agasura waited in space. And normally the soul cannot be seen, but by Krishna's grace, wanting to prove something, wanted to exhibit something, everyone could see the soul effulgent as thousands of suns waiting in space. And then when Krishna came out of Agasura, the soul entered into Krishna's body within everyone's sight. Quite astounding. And Brahma saw that. And he thought, this boy, who is this boy? He is obviously my master. He is obviously the Lord. He is obviously Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then, as the picnic was going on, he saw the other aspects of Krishna. We would say Krishna in the most relaxed mood, like the king. When he's sitting on his throne, surrounded by his guards, even his queen is sitting next to him. They are not joking. They don't talk back and forth. The children don't come and play. It is very formal. And that was Brahma's relationship with Krishna. It was very formal as Lord Narayan. So when he saw Krishna in a relaxed way, just as if one who did not have knowledge walked into the king's palace and saw the king joking with his wife teasing him, his young boy riding on his back as if the king was a horse and saying, get up, get up, get up, chalo, chalo. Then the person may think the king is just ordinary. Naturally, he would think the king is ordinary. But the king is never ordinary, because at any moment, despite him being in a relaxed mood, he can assume his kingly power and off with his head. Armies attack here, get the taxes, do this, do that. He still has all the power within him, but he's just not showing it. And why? Is because he wants to interact with his beloved family members and beloved friends. So similarly, Krishna was in Vrindavan, he can relax. Sometimes we say when the king enters his private quarters, he takes his crown off and puts it somewhere, and then he can just be himself. So this is who the self, the nature, the personality of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. This is just like what he wants to do. He wants to interact with his beloved devotees. But in such a relaxed way, the boys are putting food in Krishna's mouth. Krishna is putting food in the boy's mouth. He's massaging the legs of the calves. He's rubbing them very, very gently. And sometimes Krishna takes his forehead and puts it to the forehead of the calves and he speaks to them sweet words. Sometimes he wrestles with his friends. Sometimes he arm wrestles. Sometimes he wins. Sometimes he loses. And yet, it is all just an exchange of rasa, of ecstasy, with his dear beloved devotees. And Brahma, seeing this, he became confused, just as a person who doesn't have much knowledge may become confused upon seeing the king in his personal palace, his private quarters. So Brahma wanted to find out if indeed this little beautiful boy was the Supreme Lord. So we know he tested. How did he test? How did he test Krishna? He took away the calves and the boys with his power, and he wanted to see how Krishna would react. What would he do? Would he show something wonderful? I want to see the display of the power. Well, in fact, the most wonderful display was right before his eyes, right now, seeing the interaction between Krishna and the Brijbasis. The most wonderful display. The inner heart of the unlimitedly powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. No one can see that. No one is qualified to see that. We know of the Prime Minister. We know of the King. We hear about them. But we hear about their edicts, their laws. But we don't hear about what they do with their friends and what kind of jokes they tell each other. We don't hear about their personal lives. Very few people are trusted enough to hear about that, to know about that. Why? Because if one's not trusted enough or knowledgeable enough, advanced enough, then they will say he doesn't have the power that in fact he does have, and they won't obey him, which is dangerous. So Brahma tested, and he took away the boys, he took away the calves, and Krishna responded in his own style. And Krishna's style, as we see with Indra, when Krishna lifted the hill, he let Indra come to his own conclusions, because those conclusions that we realize are ourselves are ours forever. The greatest teacher. So, he also acted in a similar way to Brahma. He expanded himself into boys and calves, and each boy, each calf was exactly the same as the original. Everything was the same to every detail. So that when Brahma came and he saw it, he saw this, that the boys were still there, the calves were still there. He checked back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. He could not understand how there could be two or three sets of calves and boys. And then when Krishna displayed some of his power, mama anksa tejo sambhava, some of his unlimited power, Brahma fainted to the ground. He showed. Krishna showed Brahma unlimited Vishnu forms, and each of them had unlimited power. Try to conceive of how powerful the source is that unlimitedly powerful entities can come from that source, and the source doesn't lessen in power at all. Unlimited entities come from Krishna. Vishnu forms expand from Krishna, and Krishna's power doesn't get any less. So when Brahma got a glimpse of power, a glimpse of Krishna's unlimited power, he fainted. And then when he got up, he looked at Krishna with his effulgent form, which was darkish, like a monsoon cloud, an effulgent rain-filled cloud, and wearing his yellow dhoti and gunja berry earrings and a peacock feather atop his head, a garland of forest flowers, his soft lotus feet, his soft limbs dark like that monsoon cloud. When he saw Krishna in this way, he understood that this form, despite it being looking like the size of an ordinary boy, although so beautiful with its locks of hair that were curly and his eyes that would move this way and that, glancing over his devotees. When Brahma saw that, he understood that I cannot compare my form with this unlimitedly powerful form. I cannot even estimate the power of this form. And to try to understand the form of Krishna, to try to understand unlimitedly powerful, but yet in a form. Forms have boundaries. The form of this lamp means that it is here. It has a form. It has boundaries. It is here. It is not everywhere. How could this lamp be everywhere? So, Brahma, seeing unlimitedly powerful in form, he could not understand it. He could not estimate it. And he explained that if you try to understand this, you will simply fail. You'll try to understand Krishna with your own power. But Krishna can be understood, but not by the power of one's intelligence, but rather by a different process, the power of hearing about Krishna, from proper sources. Then Krishna actually, tan bhakti yoga paribhavato ritsaroja, Krishna, and this is what Brahma says, very interestingly, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, in the ninth chapter, the 11th verse, Brahma actually says this, that this is the process of knowing Krishna, that Krishna will enter into your heart in the form that you desire by the power of hearing about him. Krishna enters into the heart in that way, through the ear. Brahma says, tam bhakti yoga paribhavato ritsaroja shrutakshate patunana nata pungsan yad yad diyatad urugayava bhavayanti tantam praneyeshe sad anugraha. By his mercy, he enters in through that path, the path of hearing. So that is what Brahma is saying here. You hear about Krishna. Don't make an external change as if that is the goal. The external changes can be helpful in renovating the heart and making internal changes, but that is not the goal. So, stenestita sutagatam tanuvan manobhya. And then Brahma, after saying yes, through one's intelligence, one can understand something about the impersonal feature, like the power of the king. You can understand that, but you can't understand what the king eats for breakfast by your own, by the power of your intelligence. It's just his personal characteristics are beyond the reach of the intelligence. So, after explaining that the impersonal can be understood, like the king's power can be understood, he then explains the path of bhakti through dealing with one's life and meeting one's fate and the proper internal attitude, instead of trying to change the externals as making radical external changes, which one tends to want to do when in a difficult circumstance, but rather make the most radical internal change. And it's basically to give oneself to Krishna and put oneself in the hands of Krishna, and regardless of what our fate throws at us or covers us with, just take shelter of Krishna on all levels, body, mind, and words, body, words, and mind, and calling out to Krishna always. And this process that Brahma is explaining, Prabhupada said, is basically the secret of Krishna conscious practices. It is the essence of the methodology, the internal methodology. It's the path that all devotees should follow. It is so powerful that just jivanti, just by being alive in this devotional path, then sadayabak, one inherits the kingdom of God just as naturally as the son inherits the property of the father. as naturally, just by being alive in Krishna consciousness in this way. And then Brahma apologizes to Krishna because he realizes he's done something, he's interfered where he doesn't belong. Krishna is with his dearest beloveds and having loving exchanges, and Brahma walks in with his four heads and steals away the beloveds. And in this pastime, as Maharaj mentioned last year, it's so that Balaram became angry at Krishna. Balaram became angry at Krishna for letting Brahma take Sudam Subal, Stoka Krishna, in Krishna's presence, allowing Brahma to take them away. Balaram became so upset with Krishna on the transcendental level, so upset he didn't go out into the fields to herd the cows with the boys for the last days. But Krishna has his own way of dealing and his own way of teaching. He taught Brahma in a special way, and we can assume he is teaching us also in a special way. Sometimes we don't like the way that Krishna is teaching us, and we suggest to him, I prefer sweets and not bitter neem fruit juice. But Krishna is the best of teachers. So he apologized. Brahma apologized for what he had done. And he said, I am like your child. And just as the mother doesn't get angry at the child for kicking in the womb, so similarly, I am surrounded by the womb of material existence. What is not you? You are everything. And I have seen this myself, because I saw the calves and boys expand themselves and show that they were actually Vishnu forms, and that they were universes were coming from them, and every living entity in the universe was worshipping them directly or indirectly. I glimpsed your power. Everything is you. You are unlimitedly powerful. He actually got a glimpse of unlimited power. And he said that this comes from, I am the secondary creator, Atra Saga Vasagas Cha. I am the Saga creator. Secondary creator. You create all the ingredients, and then I, just simply the creator, empowered by Rajagun, I assemble them. I am the carpenter only. I don't create the house, the wood, the ingredients. So please forgive me. It all comes from Lord Narayan. I come from Lord Narayan, and Lord Narayan is your part. Narayana Sangam Nahi Sarva Dehinam Atmadi Sakila Lokasakshi. Now, after explaining the position of Lord Narayan in relationship to Krishna, that Lord Narayan is real. He has an eternal body. It is not illusion, as the Mayavadis say. Nachayva mayam. You are satyam. You are real. Lord Narayan is real, not your a product of your illusory energy, your illusory energy. He's pointing to Krishna as the source of even Lord Narayan. So now, after explaining this, that his direct father, Lord Narayan, is an expansion of Krishna. So Krishna is my father, so please forgive me, my dear father. please forgive me. Even though Krishna is standing there like a little boy. And he's looking at Lord Brahma. He's not even looking at Lord Brahma. Later on, Lord Brahma's going to say, you're not responding to a word that I say to you in praise of you. You're not even glancing at me. To acknowledge my words as true or false. You neither chastise me, accept me. So Brahma continues praying to Krishna. And he glorifies Krishna based on what he's just seen of Krishna's power. He's no longer mistaken. He is, as we would say, off the mental platform. He knows who Krishna is. He wasn't sure if this boy was unlimitedly powerful, and now he is sure. So he praises Krishna in text 15 to 28, 29. He praises Krishna as the Supreme Lord, the unlimitedly powerful, and Krishna's relationship with the universe and how Krishna descends as the different avatars into the universe. So there are text 15 to 28. How many verses is that? See if you can do it without taking out your mobile phone. Huh? 13, 14? Okay, take out your mobile phone. We'll work it out. No, not really, Mataji. You don't have to really take out your mobile phone. I was just joking. Okay. Google it. So, because there are so many verses describing the power of Krishna and Krishna's relationship with the universe, I decided to not go over them one by one. But instead, I made a presentation. I summarized the points and made a presentation that we shall now see. It's an audio-visual presentation. If it was a little darker, could you... Mahabhagavatapu, could you make the sun a little darker, please? Bring some Prabhu. So, just one thing. Right after this, wow. Sorry for underestimating your potency. You have so many assistants that you do things through. One time Prabhupada, this isn't exactly parallel. One time Prabhupada was taking prasadam in Mother Malati, or Malati Devi. She tells this story, how one time Srila Prabhupada was taking prasadam in Vrindavan. And they were in some house or something that was, it was outside and it was half built and the rocks were everywhere and the devotees had cooked for Prabhupada, and Prabhupada sat down. It was more or less an open braj, old braj, and he sat down and the devotees began serving prasadam, rice, dal, sabji, and chapatis, rotis. So of course, in Vrindavan, as soon as there is prasadam, immediately so many living entities come. So a dog immediately came. And of course the devotees started hut. And Prabhupada said, no, no, no. And he gave him a chapati. And he said, you never know who they are. That's what Prabhupada said. He was very, very gentle and considerate. So we, in a similar way, we should be very respectful to devotees. So what I'm going to do after we see this presentation, I'm going to ask you a very, very difficult question. And perhaps the most difficult question is, what do you remember? Because often no one remembers anything. So it's also an embarrassing question So please, I'm telling you in advance what the examination is going to be. Okay, ready? But I think this could be the wrong one, but it could be the right one. I don't remember it having a blue beginning. Yes, it's the other one. No, maybe it's this one. Oh, yes, part four. Brahma's prayers 15 to 29. Yes, indeed.
Lord Brahma attempts to express the ramifications of the opulence that he has seen Krishna display. He prays to Krishna, O Lord, I previously was unable to either understand or see you due to the coverings of your Maya, your illusory energy. But you are the controller of that Maya, and that was proved by Mother Yashoda's seeing the universe within your abdomen. Now at the present, that universe is externally manifest through your inconceivable energy, and it is therefore all that we perceive. Today, by your manifesting all the cows, cowherd boys, and Vishnu forms, who are being worshipped by all living entities, you've demonstrated that the entire creation is your inconceivable potency. And now I am seeing before me the original form of the unlimited Supreme Absolute Truth. To the ignorant, you seem to be of this material world, although it is you who appears as Brahma, the creator, who appears as Vishnu, the maintainer, and as Shiva, the destroyer. To demonstrate that you, the Absolute Truth, is an unlimited transcendental person, you descend within the universe as avatars, and you take birth among demigods, sages, humans, animals, and aquatics. As an avatar, you then, by your spiritual potency, perform your innumerable, inconceivable, mysterious pastimes. Due to you, this entire universe, which, like a dream, is by nature unreal, nevertheless appears real, and thus it covers one's consciousness and assails one with repeated miseries. This universe appears real because it is manifested by the potency of illusion emanating from you, whose unlimited transcendental forms are full of eternal happiness and knowledge. You are the one Supreme Soul, the primeval Supreme Personality, the Absolute Truth, self-manifested, endless, and beginningless. You are eternal and infallible, perfect and complete, without any rival, and free from all material designations. Your happiness can be obstructed, nor have you any connection with material contamination. Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality. By the grace of his spiritual master, a Jnani can mix bhakti with his gyan. He will then be able to see you as the soul of all souls. He will be able to see you as the super soul of his own self. This vision will allow him to cross the ocean of material existence. For one who has thus realized you, the illusory energy at once subsides, for he is free of the false vision of perceiving anything as separate from you. Seeing you with this vision of knowledge and remaining in knowledge of you, devoid of the false perceptions that cause the existence of the material world, his ignorance and illusion cease. Therefore, through knowledge, both knowledge of you and knowledge of himself as your eternal servant, neither liberation nor bondage have meaning for him, just as day and night have no meaning for one present on the sun planet. How foolish are the Jnanis! How foolish are the Mayavadis! They are fools because they consider your form as a manifestation of illusion. How foolish are conditioned souls! Regardless of how intelligent they think themselves as being, they all perceive themselves as their bodies, and they thus fail to see their self as part of you. They are all fools because they reject you, and in doing so, they search for the supreme soul outside of your supreme personality. How foolish are all of these so-called learned men. O unlimited Lord, the saintly devotees who have added bhakti to their jnana seek you out within their own bodies by rejecting everything separate from you. Indeed, how can discriminating persons appreciate the real nature of a rope lying before them until they refute the illusion that it is a snake? My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years.
Did anyone remember anything? And what was the result? You can realize the super soul. You can even enter into Shantaras. Yes, thank you. Anyone remember anything else? Yes. But loudly. There's no meaning to liberation or bondage when you realize you have nothing to do with the realm of matter. Like the person on the sun has nothing to do with sunlight or daylight. Okay. But you remember very well. But let us move on. Let us move on. Now we can have more light again. Mahabhagavat Prabhu. The light. So, the last verse that we... Now, we have to go on to the second slideshow. And we'll be able to see the verses again. There was a verse, the last verse that we had Brahma saying was Atapite Deva Padambuja Dvaya. And this will be... That should come up in a moment, Krishna willing. A very important verse, 29. That was from up to 29, and now this is Brahma's conclusion. Now remember, he's just pointed out that this boy is unlimitedly powerful, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is even the source of Lord Narayan. But how does one know that? That is how he ended. And this is the verse that he ended with. Atapite deva parambuja dvaya. Deva means, O effulgent one, or my Lord. So therefore, this is how he, after describing all that knowledge, this is his conclusion. That, O Lord, padam bhuja dvaya. Dvaya means the dual, the two. Your two padam bhuja, your two lotus feet. Prasada lesha anugrita evahi. Prasada lesha nugrata. Without getting, lesha means just a little bit. Without getting just a little bit of the mercy of your two lotus feet, janati tadvam bhagavan mahimno. Nachanya eko api charam vichinvan. Janati tapvam. By getting a little mercy of Krishna's feet, one can know Bhagavan mahimno, the glories of the personality of Godhead. It takes that. A little mercy from Krishna's lotus feet, as Brahma got just then, he can understand the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nachanya Eko. And without getting that, Api Charam Vachinvan, even if you try by your intelligence for a very, very long time, you will never understand. That's what he's saying. It is only, Brahma says, and this is his own experience as the most intelligent person. Intelligence means you can pierce what is unknowable to others through intelligence. You can know it. But even the most intelligent, such as Brahma, he cannot pierce. To understand, pierce the Lord's illusion, to understand the absolute truth. And just with a small amount of mercy, you can understand. And that's what Brahma feels just happened to him. He got a pinch, a drop of Krishna's mercy. So here is the translation, the BBT translation of this. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace, lesha, anugrita, of the mercy of your lotus feet, prambuja dvaya, of your two lotus feet, if one gets that, he can understand the greatness of your personality. And again, against the jnana method of understanding. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. Saraswati, the goddess of learning, serves Lord Brahma for she is his wife, he is her husband. But through all the Vedic study, through all the intelligence, no matter how greatly intelligent one is, one cannot pierce the Lord's illusory energy and understand anything about the personality of Godhead. When Brahma says this, he therefore thinks that by a little bit of mercy, one can understand the greatness of your personality, or a little bit of the greatness, get a glimpse. Then what about the residents of Vrindavan? If by a little bit of mercy, one can understand the greatness of the Lord, of Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, how much mercy have these residents of Vrindavan gotten to be able to put food in your mouth, to play with you, to wrestle with you, to defeat you in wrestling? The cowherd boys, after the killing of Kamsa and the music, or the killing of the wrestlers, that was the killing of Kamsa, or the wrestlers. So the music began to play and the boys came down. It was after the killing of the wrestlers. The boys jumped down. They were celebrating. Their Krishna, their friend, their dearest, had just killed these delicate young boys, had just killed these muscle-bound gym-attending heavy mountain-like wrestlers and killed them. And the boys were jumping down and they were dancing and wrestling in time to the music. And the boys started wrestling with Krishna, and sometimes they would throw Krishna down and defeat him right in the wrestling ring. How much mercy did they get? Itam satam brahma sukhana bhutya satta Sakyam Vicharu Kritapunja. For years, lifetime after lifetime, the estimation is, they had performed bhakti purely with a full desire. And the result of them wanting to be with you, to be your dearest friend, with the purest heart of wanting to serve you in this way as a friend, or as a mother, or a father, or as a beloved gopi, or as a cow, with these completely pure desires, staying, renouncing material pleasures, enduring cold, enduring heat, just to serve, and having this desire burning in the heart, and performing devotional service, and chanting in that mood, Krishna, 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 without you, I have nothing, I don't have life, when will you show me mercy? And there were the cowherd boys, as he's thinking. Now, as he's seen, how much mercy have they achieved? So Krishna, if he would reply to Brahma, as Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur puts forward, saying, Now that you've understood Brahma, what is your desire? Now here's his reply. My dear Lord, this is his desire. And as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says in his own special sweet way, at this point, Brahma falls into the ocean of Braja Prem. My dear Lord, I therefore, what do you want? I therefore pray to be so fortunate that in this life is Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma's life is unestimably long, thousands of years, millions of years. In this life or in another life, wherever I take my birth, I may be counted as one of your devotees. I pray that wherever I may be, even among the animal species, I can engage in devotional service to your lotus feet. What I want, my Lord, is I want to be your devotee. I want to engage in your devotional service. I want to serve you. I have committed an offense. Who knows where I'm going to take my next birth? Perhaps even amongst an animal species. But wherever I take my birth, please allow me to be your devotee. He says, I want to serve your lotus feet. In other words, being in the highest position in the entire universe, what to speak of being the head of a household or the head of a company or the head of a country or the governor of a state, that goes there, the head of a country or the head of the universe or the head of the planet or the head of many planets, the heavenly planets like Indra. He's saying that the position of Lord Brahma, the head of the universe, that is not as fortunate as being your devotee. So he didn't ask at this point in his, one could say, his prayers, he didn't ask for becoming a resident of Vrindavan while he's realized that the cows, the calves, the gopas, the gopis, they're in the highest position. He hasn't asked to become that because he feels himself not qualified. He asks only to become, let me become a devotee, and from there I can do what I'm doing now. And what is that? In the next two verses, he glorifies the residents of Vrindavan. He doesn't feel himself, due to his lack of qualification and have committed this offense, he doesn't feel himself worthy of even asking to become one of the Brijbasis. But rather he takes the position of glorifying them and their devotion. And he says, Sri Radharaman, oh, Almighty Lord, how greatly fortunate are the cows and ladies of Vrindavan, the nectar of whose breast milk you have happily drunk to your full satisfaction, taking the form of their calves and children. All the Vedic sacrifices performed from time immemorial up to the present day have not given you as much satisfaction. Because you have arranged this pastime, practically speaking, to reciprocate with the cows who loved you, with the other elderly senior gopis of Vrindavan who loved you as their son, and the affection that they have It takes the form of their breast milk. And because it was filled with their affection, you wanted to drink it. You were eager to drink it. And you did. And you expanded yourself into so many boys and calves just to get the opportunity to taste their offering of milk. And that gave you so much satisfaction. You did not neglect one of them, neither calf, neither cow nor gopi, because they all had so much love for you and wanted to serve you in this way. And then he says, two times he repeats, Aho Bhagyam, Aho Bhagyam. How, what great fortune. He has seen everything with the universe, within the universe. Indeed, he has created it. It is very difficult to impress Lord Brahma. But here he says, Aho Bhagyam, Aho Bhagyam, Nanda Gopa Vajau Kasham. The residents of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda Maharaj, oh, how fortunate they are. Oh, how fortunate they are. Yan mitram paramanandam purna brahma sanatanam. Yan mitra means that you, who is paramananda, the all-blissful absolute truth, the purna brahma, I am Brahma, but you are Purna Brahma, the complete greatest, eternally. Yan Mitram, you have become their friend. And Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that it is Sanatanam you have become their friend. It is not like the word Mitra that just means friend of this world, but Mitra Sanatanam. That means that not only you are eternal, not only are you not illusory like the Mayavadis say, you have not assumed this form and personality, but you are eternally Krishna, and they are eternally your friends. So they too are eternal. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd man, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that he only mentions Nanda Maharaj. He doesn't mention Sridham Subal, Stoka Krishna. Who else? Madhu Mangal and Dham, Vasudham. Or the calves, or the cows. He doesn't mention them. He only mentions Nanda Maharaj because he's so ashamed that he has stolen away these cowherd boys. And not only is he shamed, but he's also fearful of bringing up this topic again. There is no limit to their good fortune because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, Paramanandam, the eternal supreme Brahman, has become their friend. So what does it take? With a little bit, a fragment of the mercy of the Lord, one can understand his greatness. But how much mercy have these residents of Vrindavan achieved? And then Brahma reflects upon the mercy that he himself has achieved. Again, he is one of the demigods, and there are many demigods. And in a Vedic understanding, the demigods, adiatmik, adidaivik, adibhautik, for someone to perceive something, to taste something, to see something, the demigods also participate, and they also taste along with everything that one tastes. They also taste. So Brahma says, our fortune as a demigod is that these residents of Vrindavan are relating with you. They're seeing you. They're smelling your fragrance as you wander in the forest. They're seeing your effulgence. They're playing with you. They're touching you. Our good fortune is that we, as demigods, the extent of the good fortune of these residents of Vrindavan is inconceivable. We 11 presiding deities of the various senses, headed by Lord Shiva, are also most fortunate, because the senses of these devotees of Vrindavan are the cups through which we repeatedly drink the nectarian intoxicating beverage of the honey of your lotus feet. So our fortune is that we have some connection with you. And in his humility and in his enthusiasm, he is not acknowledging, Srila Jiva Goswami explains, that actually the residents of Vrindavan have completely spiritual bodies, and they are not dependent on the demigods as we are dependent on the demigods for our perception. But in his humility and enthusiasm, he's presenting it in this way, saying that our fortune is that we have association indirectly as demigods with the residents of Vrindavan. Tad bhuri bhagyam yad janma kim apyatavyam yad gokale api katha anugra rajo bishekam yad jivatam tu trikilam bhagavan mukundas twad adhyapita yad pararaja shuti mrigyam eva. What word do you recognize in that, in this? What words do you recognize? I'm thinking of one in particular, because now he's going to express something that he is very famous for in the words Rajo Abhishekam. Abhishek means to bathe, and Braj Raj Duli means the dust of Vrindavan. So Raj means the dust. So he says here in the next verse, my greatest possible good fortune. This is Buri Bhagya. The greatest good fortune I could have would be to take any birth, whatever. And here is Lord Brahma speaking. In this forest of Gokul, to take any birth and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul, so here is their qualification. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. It is very difficult to find Krishna just by studying the Vedas. But these persons, these Brajavasis, they don't know anything but Krishna. He is their life. He is their soul. They've given everything to him. He's spoken about mercy. And by the mercy of the Lord, one can understand something of the greatness of the Lord. Leishanogrita, just a little bit of mercy. So now he's going to ask a question. I mentioned this verse previously, and the question that he's going to ask is, if I have managed the universe as your devotee, and you, by your mercy, have given me the vision of some of your greatness, and Putana, Savesha, Eva, Putanapi Sakula. Putana came, Savesha, just in the dress of a devotee. And her family and her, you gave yourself to them, the entire family. You entered into Agasura. You entered into, you in your personal form have entered into them. Now then, since you are Vishva Phalat Phalam, you are the one who's giving everyone in the universe, you're the one who's awarding all benedictions, and you've given yourself already to someone like Putana, now I have a question for you. I am bewildered. Here it is over here. Ayan Muyati. Muyati means bewildered. I am bewildered. How are you going to reciprocate with the Brijbasis? Because Yad Dharma, they've given you their religion. They've given you their artha, their wealth. They've given up all their friendships to just focus on you. You, they've given up their priyatamas, their beloveds. You are everything for them. Tanaya, their children. They have given you their life. How are you going to reciprocate with them now? If you give yourself, you are such a generous giver, you've given yourself to Putana, how will you reciprocate with these Brijbasis? And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, you cannot. And therefore, when Krishna disappears from the rasa dance, and the gopis are so angry at him when he returns, he pacifies them and says that I've done this just to show your glories. Because regardless of how I treated you, I broke your heart. You've come, you've given up everything to dance with me, being attracted to the sound of my flute. Krishna blew his flute, and by his flute he called each of the gopis individually into their hearts. The flute sound entered them and pulled them as if they were haunted, enchanted, just pulled them out of their house, completely captivated. And then when they get there, their parents say, you cannot come. Their husbands say, you cannot go. They take their children and put them down. They don't dress properly. They are so captivated by Krishna and wanting to be with them. And they go to Krishna in the forest that is full of tigers and snakes. And the Krishna says, now that you have seen the beauty of the forest, you can all go home. And Krishna, by doing this, he elevates their prema to the platform of pranaya. Because that which is deepest in one's heart, one doesn't speak so easily. So when Krishna did this, he raised their level of love to the mood of pranaya, which meant that they lost their shyness and they began to speak to him. You should not treat us like this. We've given everything to you. We love you completely. You are our Lord. You are everything to us. And Krishna wanted to hear their words of love coming from their lotus-like lips. Pure love, with not the slightest tinge of lust. As Krishna's body, Brahma is saying, is non-material, it is spiritual, universes come from him. The modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance are worshipping him. He is not under their control, and all his dealings are on this mysterious, most mysterious, spiritual, intimate platform that is hidden from the understanding of those who have materialistic vision. Although by hearing about this quality of selfless love, everyone but the most covered will become attracted, because it is selfless. And everyone in this world is attracted and honors selfless deeds. The businessman is only honored when he gives charity, when someone gives up their life to help others. They are honored because it is selfless. And this is the highest of selflessness. Everything for Krishna. Everything for Krishna. Everything for Krishna. And it is so attractive. And the land of everything for Krishna carries with it an unparalleled sweetness. And it is attractive. And to serve Krishna and glorify Krishna in the land of Vrindavan fills everyone with happiness. And as we saw Prabhupada do, to fill one's heart with Vrindavan and go to different places of the world and bring Vrindavan throughout the world is certainly tavakatam ritam tapta jivanam. This is the most, it is such a munificent, beneficent, generous activity. So, Brahma is saying here, how are you going to reciprocate with the residents of Vrindavan? Because you are everything for them. And Krishna himself admits this in the 32nd chapter of the 10th canto, when he says, Naparyeham, I am indebted to you. He is sold to the residents of Vrindavan. He is not a dictator who sits on his throne and says, I've created you, and if you don't follow my orders, you're going to be miserable. Now you must obey me and love me, or else the lightning bolt will come. He's not like that. Rather, Bhaktavatsalya Atma Pajantava Danyata. He is the lover of his devotees. And he becomes the servant of his own devotees. And he is Naswatantra Ivanripa. He doesn't consider himself independent of his devotees. His devotees bless first and the Lord's blessings follow. So this is Brahma's question. And it is not the kind of question that you ask while you cleverly know the answer, a rhetorical question. You know, what color is the sky? Yes, very good. You have understood the answer. No, Brahma says, I am bewildered. He is bewildered with his great intelligence. The result is that he's completely bewildered because these resonances of Vrindavan completely captured Krishna. And he's seen that Krishna is unlimited. So, what we are being requested to do is to use our intelligence and the softness of our heart and our capacity to hear and understand, to get a glimpse, although it may be from a far distance due to the unlimited coverings over my consciousness, to get a glimpse of what love for Krishna is. And to somehow, within our own hearts, let the desire to take birth, that only if one day, crores and crores and crores of births away, one day may I be able to serve the servants of the servants of the Vrijvasis. Brahma doesn't end there. He continues. My dear Lord Krishna. We'll first read the actual translation here. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. This is the quality of the heart of Krishna. Kamva dayalam sharanam brajema. So what is left? You've given yourself so you don't have yourself to give anymore. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated only to you? That is called Kevala Bhakti. Next verse. In case one may think, I am a great impersonal sannyasi, and I have no possessions, and I have no attachments, and I wander alone in the forest. I am more advanced than these household of Vrijvasis who tend their cows. So therefore Brahma says, my dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remains thieves. Their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. My dear Master, so why has this Lord come? Although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth to imitate material life, just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. This is a very interesting verse, that Krishna, you are not even touched by material existence. I didn't choose my birth. I didn't choose the shape of my nose and the lack of hair and the lack of this and that lack. I didn't choose these things. The time, the place, the circumstance, the body. I am forced. But Krishna is not forced by anything. It is all his energy. That which is forcing me worships Krishna. So what forces Krishna to come? And the answer is Krishna is not forced. The question is, well, then why does he come? And here Lord Brahma says, you come to this earth, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth just to exhibit and expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. So the surrendered devotees are interacting with Krishna on this level of his pastimes, the fully loving Brijbasi devotees. And the devotees who are not on that level, when Krishna performs these pastimes, they hear about them. They fill their consciousness with these pastimes. They have content for their life, their minds to think of. They become attracted to Krishna and his dealings with his devotees. His killing the demons, his playing in Vrindavan. And in this way, the desires that they have in their heart to serve Krishna become nourished by this process of hearing and chanting about Krishna, which is just what Brahma said in the beginning as the process. Gyane Prasamurupastramante Eva Jivanti San Mukaritam Bhavadiya Vartam Stane stita shrutagatam tanovan manobhya. And the unconquerable Lord, by this process of hearing, where the Lord's pastimes and activities understood in the proper way enter the heart, they nourish our devotional kripa. And chanting Krishna's names, oh, when will I receive a drop of your mercy? Here I am in the material world, in material consciousness, drowning in an ocean of material desires and anartis. My bhakti lata bija, I can't even find it amidst all the weeds that have been growing for so many years. Crushed by the elephant of so many offenses. Only if I get just a drop of your mercy, like a baby crying for mother, when will our chanting have that kind of quality? Then the response by Krishna is immediate. I've seen that. So often I pray and it's no one's home, it seems. But it's just with... But soon as a little sincerity enters the heart, some sincere desire enters the heart, then response is, of course, it's up to Krishna. But immediate. Because Krishna is there and he's waiting for us to turn to him. So he imitates the life, a cowherd boy's life, because he likes this kind of life. It's the ideal life. There's no jobs. There's no, whenever you have a job, you have in English, the four-letter word that you comes along with a job is called a boss. And you have to please your boss. And there's no mobile phones, and there's no this kind of. This is the village life. It is simpler, and the mind can relax and can have some hope of being there while we chant Krishna's names and pray. So this is Krishna's ideal life with the cows, with the residents of Vrindavan. Now, just three more verses here. So, this is reaching his conclusion. Janata eva janatu. Please, everyone say this. Kim bhayuk kirtaname prabho. Janate eva janatu. Let other people say, yes, I know Krishna. You are standing before me, Lord. There with, still with that morsel of food in your hand, still with the flute tucked here, the buffalo horn here, the stick here used to herd the calves. And I cannot fathom, I cannot understand anything about who you are actually and what your potency is. So, Kimba Yukta Name Prabhu, what other people may say, yes, 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 I know something about Krishna. But what use are my words that have no actual understanding? Because your opulences, manaso vapaso vachu, your opulences, baibam tavagochara, they are far beyond my capacity to understand. So he's in such a position of awe and reverence at this point. And then, contrast that to the cowherd boys. They have no awe and reverence. They're so overflooded simply with love for Krishna, spontaneous, natural love for Krishna, that they'll push Krishna again. But when Krishna goes off for one moment to see some of the magnificence of the Vrindavan forest, all the cowherd boys, they run after him. Aham purvam, aham purvam. They are just trying to touch Krishna's body and be the first one to touch Krishna's transcendental body and to decorate Krishna. And Brahma at this time is overwhelmed with awe and reverence because of what he has done. I remember one class at Govardhan Maharaj that you were reading from perhaps Stavamala, and you were reading that the cause of humility, if one commits a big mistake, commits an offense, it causes humility to take birth in the heart. So Brahma is very, very humble. And remember, he's the chief of the universe. There are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think in that way. As far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my body, my mind, my body, and my words. And up to this point, Krishna has not replied to any word that he has said. And up to this point, Krishna has not even looked at him. And Brahma is feeling very uncomfortable. And therefore he says, my dear Krishna, and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, because in this, it's Anu Janiha Mam Krishna, that he specifically says, dear Krishna, because he wants Krishna to make some attachment and love for Vrindavan to take birth in his heart. He uses the word Krishna. My dear Krishna, please, will you let me go now? I'm feeling very uncomfortable because he doesn't belong here. Because he's not actually, he's the greatest of devatas, but he's not qualified to interact in Vrindavan. Because that is the highest of qualifications. We could and should long for this. And Krishna consciousness is such a mysterious process, because on one hand, we will feel so unqualified, and on the other hand, this is advancement. When dānya, humility, increases, and on the other hand, our desire to be with Krishna, to serve Krishna, increases, the greatest, so the distance increases, and the incredible tension exists when this happens. And the tension increases only, spiritual tension. In Delhi, all the little vans that they have that sell Bhagavad Gitas, they all say on them, read Bhagavad Gita for an anxiety-free life. I am wondering which Bhagavad Gita this is. Give ourselves to Krishna completely. Beg Him to accept us. Take that mood. I am the most unqualified. The people who criticize me, they don't know how bad it actually is from the inside. Just imagine if a loudspeaker was attached from your mind to the world. Would you have a friend left? And here I am, Krishna. And yet somehow or another, you have caught me. What will you do with me? Please, please give me a drop of your mercy. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You, I shouldn't have to say this to you, you are the knower and seer of all things. Indeed, you are the Lord of all the universes, not me. Because he had that little bit of abhiman, that ahankar. I am Brahma. I have come and I will now test to see this boy and see what he really is. I am Brahma, the great one in the universe. But you are the Lord of the universe. And whatever ability I have that makes me proud, it is your gift only. And yet, I become proud. And yet, even though it is your gift, and you, not I, are the Lord of the universe, it is my service. You've given me this for service. So now, I offer this one universe at your lotus feet, and this is my service. And to have service is the greatest fortune. So Srila Prabhupada, in the purport to this, this verse, the BBT purport says, Prabhupada's comment from the Krishna book on this, my dear Lord, although you are the supreme Lord of all creation, I sometimes falsely think that I am the master of this universe. This is what false ego does. We need to feel ourselves master of something. And we will always, as long as we have a false ego, as long as we are conditioned, we will want to be and feel ourselves master of something. It may be small, it may be big, but we will feel ourselves master. I am falsely thinking I am the master of this universe. It's false because it's a gift, and in 1 second the gift can be taken. I may be master of this universe, but there are innumerable universes, and there are also innumerable Brahmas who preside over these universes. But actually, you are the master of them all. As the supersoul in everyone's heart, you know everything. Please, therefore, accept me as your surrendered servant. I hope that you will excuse me for disturbing you in your pastimes with your friends and your calves. And now, if you will kindly allow me to do so, I will immediately leave so you can enjoy your friends and calves without my presence. And the purport continues by the BBT devotees. Upon seeing the intense love the residents of Vrindavan had for Lord Krishna, Brahma felt unqualified to remain there. He was not eager to give up the Lord's association, but he felt it better to return to his personal devotional service in Brahmaloka. And then the final verse of Brahma's prayers. I'll just attempt to read it. He just basically does kirtan. Sri Krishna Vrishnikula Pushkara Joshadayan Chamanirjara Dvija Pasudhadi Vridhi Karin Udama Savarahara Chitti Rakshashadru Akalpamarkam Arhan Bhagavan Namaste. My dear Sri Krishna, you bestow happiness upon the lotus-like Vrishni dynasty and expand the great ocean consisting of the earth, the demigods, the brahmanas, and the cows. You dispel the dense darkness of irreligion and oppose the demons who have appeared on this earth. So he's explaining what he sees from the position of Brahma, because we can only explain from our own position, our own consciousness. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as this universe exists, and as long as the sun shines, I will offer my obeisances to you. The BBT purport contains a comment by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which we shall read and then we will end. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Brahma, in his shame, felt himself to be like a Brahma Rakshasa from Satyaloka who had come to the earth to disturb Lord Krishna and his intimate friends and calves. Brahma is lamenting that although Lord Krishna is most exalted, the Lord of all Lords, because he had appeared before Brahma in such a simple and innocent feature, decorated with a stick, a conch shell, ornaments, red clay, a peacock feather, and so on, and sporting with his cowherd boyfriends, Brahma felt terrible that he dared to challenge him. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur ends his comment by saying, may these prayers of Brahma, which take away all doubts and broadcast all the definitive conclusions of devotional service, may these prayers become the expert craftsmanship of the foundation of my consciousness. But there is one more thing. Please bear with me for one moment. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his Madhurya Kadambini, near the end, he describes what it's like for a devotee who has been yearning and yearning to see Krishna, who has been chanting and crying to see Krishna, who has been meditating and thinking about Krishna, who has not been tempted or touched by material desires, and has been chanting and chanting in pure consciousness. And then one day, Krishna, by his mercy, reveals himself to the devotee. So, please listen. It is quite wonderful. Attaining the power to taste all the Lord's qualities, such as his beauty and his fragrance, and then, after attaining that power, he tastes each one. The devotee ascends to higher and higher peaks of astonishing experience. His heart melts when he understands the Lord's affection for his devotees. Then he says, the Lord says to him, O best of devotees, many births you have given up your wife, your house, and wealth for my sake. And out of your desire to serve me, you have endured the miseries of cold, of wind, of hunger, thirst, and pain. And to serve me, you have tolerated being dismissed and criticized by other men. And you have taken to the life of a beggar. In payment for your sacrifice, I cannot give you anything. I have become indebted to you. Since lordship over the whole earth, taking the post of a demigod, and even having mystic powers, it is unsuitable to give you these things. How can I offer them to you? Can I give grass and straw, which is enjoyable to cows, to a human being? Though I am unconquerable, I have been conquered by you. I live for you. I dance for you. And I myself hold on to the creeper of your good qualities for my support. Hearing these affectionate, sweet words that the Lord has spoken, the devotee says, O Lord, O Master, O Ocean of Mercy, you glanced upon me while I was being bitten by an array of crocodiles, the infinite miseries of endless birth and death, amidst the terrifying current of material existence. Lord, you are transcendental to all the material planets. Your heart is like melted butter, and it melts as it manifests mercy. You are the original spiritual master. You destroy ignorance in the form of such qualities as lust by manifesting the Sudarshan chakra of your wonderful form. You have pierced these crocodiles and freed me from the clutches of their teeth. To fulfill my desire to serve your lotus feet, you placed the syllables of your mantra in my ears, and thus you destroyed my suffering. You purified me by the process of continuous hearing and chanting and remembering your qualities and name. And you made me understand how to perform service to yourself through the association of your devotees. I am unintelligent. I am the lowest of the low. And not even for one day have I honestly served you. I am miserly. I am selfish. I deserve to be punished. But however, the opposite has occurred. You showed your very self to me, and you have made me drink nectar. But you have saddened me to the depth of my heart by saying that you have become my debtor, and now I am thinking of what to do. I would be very foolish to ask you to pardon all my offenses, because I've committed not five, not seven, not eight, not 1,000, not 1,000,000, not 1,000,000,000. How many offenses have I committed? Let all the fruits of my past activities, let them be received. Let them be received. Now, seeing you, I understand that previously I have compared your complexion to the dark limbs of a monsoon cloud, to a blue lotus, and to a sapphire. I compared your effulgent face to a moon and your tender feet to newly sprouted leaves. And now these examples appear like a pile of burned mustard seeds compared to a golden mountain. Or they appear like a chickpea chana in comparison to a touchstone. Or like a jackal in comparison to a lion. Or like a mosquito in comparison to Garuda. By my poor intelligence, I have certainly committed offenses to you. Such inept poetry meant as praise unto you is accepted by common people. But I am like an unsettled cow threatened by the sudden appearance of your glorious form. But I cannot even lessen your beauty by my poor comparisons. In this way, the devotee again and again praises the Lord. And the Lord reveals to the devotee all qualities such as love, anything that can be desired in relationship to the Lord's pastimes. He fills the devotee with rasa. He fills the devotee with Sri Vrindavan. He fills him with the Mahayoga Peet. He fills him with the most dear daughter of Vrishabhanu, her associates such as Lalita and other servants, and his own friends such as Subal and the Yamuna River and Govardhan, and forests such as Bandiravan, Nandishwar Giri, and all the mothers, fathers, brothers, friends, and servants there, and all the houses. All this fills his consciousness by the Lord's mercy. And the Lord submerges the devotee in the enchanting tidal waves of various kinds of bliss. He fills him. And then, with all his entourage, with all he has given him, he disappears. The devotee recovers consciousness after some moments, and filled with anxiety to again see the Lord, he again opens his eyes, and not seeing the Lord, he begins crying. Was I merely dreaming? No. I have neither drowsiness or any symptoms of sleep in my eyes. Was this a hallucination? Was it my imagination? Was it witchcraft? Some tantras? No. Was it from some defect in my own mind? Was this the fulfillment of some material desire? none of this could approach what I have just seen. Could it be that I have met the Lord for a moment? No, because it is completely different from all previous visions of the Lord that I remember. In this way, the devotee remains in uncertainty. He lies upon the dusty earth. He prays constantly, but not obtaining that experience again, he laments. He rolls about on the ground. He weeps. He wounds his body. He faints. He recovers. He stands. He sits. He runs here and there and cries like a madman. Sometimes he remains silent. Sometimes he performs his daily duties. Sometimes he fails to do so, like a person possessed by spirits or evil planets. He talks incoherently. But then, when a devotee friend approaches and privately in a secluded place asks, "What has happened to you?" he explains his experience. When the friend replies that by good fortune he has met the Lord, that devotee, satisfied, recovers and becomes happy. But then again he laments, "How can that I attain that experience again? Was it a shower of mercy from some great devotee? Or was it the result by lucky chance? Somehow, sometime, of some past honest endeavor to serve the Lord? Or perhaps it was simply the causeless mercy of the Lord upon the lowest of the low, who is filled with terrible qualities? By some indescribable fortune I have attained the Lord. But because of some very deep offense, I have lost him again. With confused intelligence, I cannot understand what is true, what is false. Where shall I go? What shall I do? Who can I ask? By what means can I again see the Lord? I am completely empty. I have no soul. I have no shelter. I feel like I am being scorched by a forest fire. The whole world looks upon me. It seems that it is ready to devour me. I will leave the world. I will live alone in solitude for some time." And when he's alone, he laments further, "O lotus-faced Lord, whose face holds a stream of nectar, who is bedecked with fragrant garlands, which scent the entire forest and attracts swarms of vibrating bees, just for one moment may I serve your Lordship again. Having once tasted your sweetness, I cannot long for anything else." He begins to roll on the ground. He breathes heavily. He faints. He loses his mind. Suddenly, he sees the Lord everywhere and he rejoices. He embraces, he laughs, he dances and sings. And when the Lord disappears again, he becomes filled with remorse. And he weeps. Being unlimitedly extraordinary in behavior, he withdraws his very life symptoms and he loses awareness of whether he still has a body or not. and then not aware that his material body has passed to the elements. He understands only that his desired Lord, the ocean of mercy, has manifested himself, engaged him in service, and is leading him to his own home. Thus, the devotee reaches the goal of life.
Welcome to the Hare Krishna movement, Prabhu.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Sri Barsana Dham ki jai, Sri Mati Radharani ki jai, Sri Mati Radharani Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Nitai Gaur Bhimalande Yari Yari Bho.